Do you think all vegetables are good for you? Well, think again. If you're living with diabetes, there is one group of vegetables that might be harming you. Things like potatoes, pumpkins, or parsnips all count as starchy vegetables. They can spike your blood sugar to well over 200 in only 30 minutes. And that's way too high and way too fast. And the same goes for fruits. Not all of them are good for diabetics. Those sweet ones like bananas or grapes can shoot your blood sugar to the moon. So in this video, we're gonna find some better options. And don't worry, if you like to eat starchy vegetables or sweet fruits, I'm gonna show you a few ways how you can still eat them, but avoid that frustrating blood sugar spike. Keep in mind, I'm not a doctor, I'm not a nutritionist. I've just lived with diabetes for 35 years, and I have real life experience with this condition. So what is the best vegetable for people with diabetes? I wanted to find out for myself. So I bought 20 most popular veggies, and during the last 20 days, I ate every single one of them. 1 hour after eating each of these vegetables, I tested my blood sugar to see how much it spiked.
And I think we got the winner. It's right here.
So here is what we're gonna do. We will divide the 20 most popular vegetables in 3 bowls. Green bowl with vegetables causing only a mild blood sugar spike, aka blood sugar friendly vegetables. Yellow bowl with vegetables causing a moderate blood sugar spike, aka okay vegetables. And red bowl with vegetables that can cause a steep blood sugar spike. By the way, throughout this video, I will be sharing several of my favorite veggie recipes. So make sure to watch all the way to the end. Let's start with one of the most popular vegetables there is. Bell peppers. Bell peppers are a great source of vitamin C and vitamin A. But let's see what they do to our blood sugar. A general rule of thumb is, the more carbs you see, the bigger blood sugar spike you will get. A cup of diced bell peppers has 8 carbs. That's a decent amount. But out of these 8 grams of carbs, 2 grams is fiber. Now, fiber is great for us, because unlike the other carbs, our body cannot digest it, and that's why it doesn't cause blood sugar to spike. So when we want to know how much certain food will impact our blood sugar, we need to deduct fiber from the carbs. When I did that for my cup of diced bell peppers, I realized it has only about 6 net carbs after deducting the fiber. That's not too bad. But the next important thing we need to look at is the glycemic index, or GI, of bell peppers. A typical bell pepper has a GI of around 30, which is also pretty good. Now, when I ate a cup of bell peppers, I did see my blood sugar spiking, but the blood sugar spike was not dramatic, it was not that bad. And that's why I put bell peppers in the yellow bowl. For all vegetables in the yellow bowl, I know I can eat a moderate portion, like 1 bell pepper, without being too worried about my blood sugars. Now, one important thing to note is that I'm an insulin dependent type 1 diabetic. So I typically take a pre-meal insulin dose whenever I eat more than 5 net carbs, even if it's just a bell pepper. Next up is broccoli. I absolutely love broccoli because this veggie is loaded with antioxidants, fiber, and vitamin C. It's very beneficial for eye health, heart health, and general disease prevention. But let's see what broccoli does to our blood sugar, shall we? A cup of broccoli has only 6 carbs, and when we deduct 3 grams of fiber, we'll get to only 3 net carbs. For me, any veggie that has less than 5 net carbs per portion is a great choice, and broccoli definitely meets this criteria. But the next important thing to look at is the glycemic index of broccoli. The American Diabetes Association recommends eating primarily foods with GI of less than 55. For me, less than 55 is okay, but less than 40 is better, especially when it comes to vegetables. Raw broccoli has a GI of 15. That's amazing. But we have to keep in mind that whenever we steam, boil, or roast pretty much any vegetables, the glycemic index will go up. Cooked broccoli can have a GI of around 40. Now, during my blood test, I noticed that cooked broccoli will spike my blood sugar faster than raw broccoli. But take a look at this. Even when I ate a cup of boiled broccoli, I did see my blood sugar spiking only very little. And that's why I put broccoli in the green bowl. By the way, for all vegetables in the green bowl, I'm personally not concerned with the portion sizes at all. I will simply eat as much as I want. Most of the time, I don't even need to take any insulin because they have very little carbs. Moving on to probably the most popular vegetable of them all, potatoes. Potatoes are often considered as a healthy and nutritious food because they are rich in potassium and vitamin C, for example. But a cup of russet potatoes, which is the most popular type, has 26 carbs and only 2 grams of fiber. So 24 net carbs. That's a lot. And the glycemic index of russet potatoes is 80. That's very high. When I ate a portion of boiled russet potatoes, my blood sugar spiked to well over 200 in only 30 minutes, although I took my insulin with it. And that's why I put potatoes in the red bowl. But please don't get me wrong. I'm not saying that you should never eat potatoes again. What I am saying, and that goes for all vegetables in the red bowl. Is consider smaller portion sizes and combine the potatoes with green bowl vegetables. This will add fiber and slow down that blood sugar spike. Now, another thing you can do to avoid massive blood sugar spikes from potatoes is choosing other kinds of potatoes with lower glycemic index. Sweet potatoes, for example, have GI of around 50. Charisma potatoes have a GI of 53. These are values that are well within the ADA recommendation of less than 55. Although it's not ideal, you can see in this graph that both sweet potatoes and charisma potatoes raised my blood sugar much slower and a bit less than regular potatoes. Especially charisma potatoes are very good. Another thing that can help a little bit is not peeling the potatoes and leaving the skin on, because the skin has about a half of the potato's fiber content. And as I already mentioned, fiber always helps to slow down that blood sugar spike. But there is another trick you can do to slow down that blood sugar spike, and that's preparing the potatoes the right way. You definitely don't want to roast them in the oven, because roasting increases the glycemic index of the potatoes even more than boiling. You want to boil the potatoes, and once they are done, put them in the fridge and cool them down. The cooling process will create resistant starch, which your body cannot break down into glucose easily. And even if you reheat those potatoes later on, they will still not raise your blood sugar as fast as the normal boiled potatoes. But my absolute favorite way to eat cold potatoes is to make a potato salad by adding some greens, olive oil, Dijon mustard, and vinegar. Look at this, the potato salad I made raised my blood sugar much less than the same amount of regular potatoes. That's really fascinating, isn't it? Next up are onions. Now, I don't know anyone who doesn't use onion for cooking, except for my brother-in-law who is allergic to them. But anyway, I personally love using onions because they add rich flavor to my dishes. But a cup of chopped onion has about 15 carbs, and even after deducting 3 grams of fiber, we get to 12 net carbs. That's quite a lot for a veggie, but we also need to look at the glycemic index to have the full picture. The GI of raw onions is 15. That's pretty good. But when you cook the onion, the GI might raise to around 40, and that's sort of borderline, while still within the ADA recommendation of less than 55. But when I tested my blood sugar after eating one roasted onion, I could see a gradual but relatively small spike in my blood sugar. It lasted for about an hour, and therefore I put onions in the yellow bowl. But to be honest, I don't worry too much about adding onions to my meals, because typically I just add one or two onions in the whole dish. So the amount per portion and the impact on my blood sugar is very minimal. Next popular veggie we're gonna talk about are cucumbers. What I love about cucumbers is that while they are crisp and refreshing, they're 96% water. So they help hydrate your body, and they also benefit your skin, digestion, and overall wellness. A cup of raw sliced cucumbers has 4 carbs, and after deducting 1 gram of fiber, we get to 3 grams of net carbs. That's excellent. The glycemic index is 15. That's also extremely low, so we're probably looking at a very blood sugar friendly food here. When I tested my blood sugar after eating a whole cucumber, the blood sugar spike was hardly noticeable, but my belly was full. Therefore, cucumbers go in the green bowl without a doubt. You can eat as much as you'd like without worrying about your blood sugar. Now, cucumbers are the most blood sugar friendly vegetable we've had on the list so far. But if they are too plain for you, don't worry about it and make tzatziki. Shred cucumber in a bowl, add a pinch of salt, let it stand for a few minutes, and then drain it and get rid of most of the water. Then add Greek yogurt, garlic, fresh dill, a splash of olive oil, mix everything together, and voila! You're looking at an extremely healthy and blood sugar friendly side dish or snack. I love eating tzatziki, they are so refreshing. But let's move on to another super popular vegetable, tomatoes. Now I know, botanically speaking, tomatoes, just like peppers, are considered a fruit. But most people think about them as veggies, especially in the culinary context. And that's why I included them in this video. We're talking about eating them, not planting them. Okay. A cup of plum tomatoes usually has around 7 carbs, of which 2 are fiber. So we're looking at promising 5 net carbs. But from my experience, most people prefer cherry tomatoes, which are typically sweeter and can have about 8 net carbs. The next important thing to look at is the glycemic index, because the higher the GI is, the faster tomatoes will spike your blood sugar. Now please be aware that the GI can differ depending on many factors, such as the source of information, the ripeness, and the preparation method. Now, the glycemic index of tomatoes usually falls within 20 and 30, and that's very good. The sweeter the tomatoes are, the higher GI they will probably have. But the less sweet they are, the lower the GI will be. During my testing, I also found out that the more ripe and the more processed the tomatoes are, the faster they will spike my blood sugar. Look at this. A cup of raw tomatoes raised my blood sugar very mildly, but a cup of roasted sweet cherry tomatoes spiked my blood sugar quite a bit more, although I took my insulin with it. The difference is clearly noticeable. And that's why I decided to put tomatoes in the yellow bowl. They are not as blood sugar friendly as cucumbers, but they don't spike my blood sugar as much as potatoes, for example. Now, I don't shy away from eating tomatoes. I actually have them quite often, but I always count or estimate carbs and take the right dose insulin with it as needed. Here is another favorite veggie dish of mine, pico de gallo. There's a lot of tomatoes going into this one. You just cut fresh tomatoes, onion, serrano peppers, and lots of cilantro in small pieces. Add lime juice and salt, mix everything together, and it's done. This salad goes very well with barbecue, but you can also mix it with cooked quinoa, beans, corn, or avocado, and create so many healthy meal variations. Now let's turn our attention to lettuce, particularly romaine and iceberg varieties, which are the wildly popular ones. With a mere 1 gram of carbs and a half gram of fiber per cup, these leafy greens are exceptionally low in net carbs, making them a staple in every green bowl. Glycemic index is only 15, which further adds to their blood sugar friendly profile. Normally I add lettuce to various salad bowls, but during my testing I ate lettuce on its own a few times to see if it would spike my blood sugar, but it never did. Therefore I put lettuce in the green bowl, without a doubt. I simply eat as much as I feel like eating, and I don't worry about taking any insulin or worrying about my blood sugar. But there are even better leafy greens than lettuce, and I will talk more about them a little bit later in this video. Now let's dive into one of the most widely used vegetables, carrots. While carrots offer a vibrant crunch and are rich in nutrients, it's essential to be mindful of their impact on blood sugar. Here is a rule of thumb that I learned during my research. Veggies that are yellow, orange, or red typically have a moderate to high carb content. On the other hand, veggies that are green typically have a very low carb content, and they are higher in fiber. And that's what I want 99% of the time. Less carbs, more fiber. Carrot is no exception. With 12 total carbs, 4 grams of fiber, and 8 net carbs per cup, carrots are a relatively carby vegetable. But the glycemic index of carrots is not too bad, between 15 and 40, depending on the preparation method, depending on if you cooked them or not. Remember, cooking increases the GI. Now let me show you what my blood sugar did when I ate carrots during my testing. One raw carrot raised my blood sugar only very slightly, but when I blanched the carrots, roasted them in the oven, and ate 3 of them, my blood sugar spiked close to 180 within 1 hour after eating them. So similar to other carby vegetables, eating a moderate amount of carrots is probably a good idea. And also taking the right dose of insulin if you're insulin dependent diabetic. Next up are green beans. With 7 grams of carbs, 3.5 grams of fiber, and 3.5 net carbs per cup, they are a fairly low carb option. Even if you cook green beans, they maintain a low glycemic index of 30. Promising a glucose-friendly profile. When I ate a cup of boiled green beans during my testing, I did see my blood sugar spiking only gently. And that's why I put green beans in the green bowl. These crunchy bad boys are one of my go-to options as a side dish whenever I see them on the menu. But now it's time to talk about another popular side dish, which is often considered a veggie, corn, and more specifically sweet corn. Now you might say that corn is a grain or a fruit, but again, this is not really the point of this video. Most people see corn as a vegetable, and that's why I include it here on this list. But while corn adds a sweet crunch to many dishes, it's essential to be mindful of its impact on your blood sugar, because a cup of sweet corn contains 27 carbs, and deducting 3 grams of fiber gets us to 24 net carbs, which is a lot. Now, sweet corn has a glycemic index of 52, which is within the ADA recommendation of less than 55, but in combination with the high carb content, is definitely more than I would like to see. During my test, I could clearly see that corn spikes my blood sugar quite a lot and quite fast. After eating a bowl of corn, my blood sugar spiked to about 200, although I took my insulin with it. And that's why I decided to place sweet corn in the red bowl. You don't have to stay away from it completely, but you might want to consider going for a smaller portion size or combine the corn with some leafy greens or other low GI vegetables in a nice salad. Also, if you are an insulin dependent diabetic like me, injecting the pre-meal dose 15 to 20 minutes before eating corn makes a difference and makes the blood sugar spike less. This method is called prebolusing, and I find it working really well with any vegetables or any other food from the Red Bull. Now, having said all this, I'm still a firm believer that sweet corn is a much better option than some other side dishes like white rice, pasta, white bread, things like that, because those will spike your blood sugar much more and much faster than a bowl of sweet corn. Moving on to another of my favorite vegetables, garlic. This flavor powerhouse contains vitamin C, vitamin B6, selenium, manganese, and other beneficial compounds. But how will garlic impact your blood sugar? Well, one clove of garlic has about 1 gram of carbs. That's really good because typically we only add a few cloves in the whole dish, right? A few carbs should not impact your blood sugar too much. The average glycemic index of garlic looks promising too. It varies from 10 to 30, depending on the source, which means that garlic probably won't spike your blood sugar very fast, if at all. But see, that's the issue I have with the glycemic index in general. How can it be between 10 and 30? Unfortunately, there is almost never a precise number. There are many sources with different information, there is different preparation methods. All that impacts the GI of every food you eat. But don't worry, the GI information I provide here in this video is coming from my most trusted sources and is backed up by my real life experience with those foods. When I tested garlic, I found out that I can enhance the taste of many of my dishes without causing any notable spike in my blood sugar. And that's why I've decided to place it in the green bowl. Now let's explore another popular veggie, peas. The main reason why I really like peas is that they offer this burst of sweetness, which I can add to my meal without adding any processed foods or any sugar. A cup of green peas contains 21 carbs, and when we deduct 7 grams of fiber, we get to 14 net carbs. That's actually more than I expected, to be quite honest. Now the glycemic index of peas varies between 22 and 50, depending on how you prepare it. Now I don't need my peas to be warm, so I usually just unfreeze it in a bowl of water and drain it. That way I can keep the GI on the low end. And after eating a cup of peas, I could see my blood sugar spiking, but it was nothing dramatic. It didn't get above 140. So peas were definitely better for my blood sugar than sweet corn, but not as good as broccoli, for example. Therefore, peas are going into yellow bowl. Feel free to add them to your plate, but keep in mind they might raise your blood sugar quite a bit if you overdo it. Next up, a vegetable that's often considered a culinary delight, asparagus. With only 5 carbs per cup, asparagus definitely is a low carb option. And after deducting 2 grams of fiber, we get to a mere 3 net carbs per cup. That's really good. But what about the glycemic index? Well, asparagus again has a GI of 15, which is very low, making it looking like a very blood sugar friendly option at the first sight. During my testing, a cup of asparagus didn't spike my blood sugar very much. It actually behaved similarly to things like broccoli or green beans. And therefore, it's safe to say that asparagus belongs in the green bowl. You can indulge in this tasty delight without worrying too much about your blood sugar and carb counting. Now, let's talk about another popular vegetable. This one is also known for its ability to improve your sex life, celery. With only 3 carbs per cup, celery is an excellent low carb option. After deducting 1.5 grams of fiber, we end up with just 1.5 net carbs. That's amazing. Celery also has a glycemic index of 15, just like the asparagus we talked about before, making it an excellent blood sugar friendly option. During my testing, I found that even 2 cups of fresh celery sticks hardly spiked my blood sugar at all. And I was really happy to see that. So it's probably no surprise that celery falls into the green bowl. You can't go wrong with celery. My favorite way to eat celery is to cut it into juicy sticks and eat it with a bowl of hummus. That's a very balanced, blood sugar friendly snack. Moving on to a fall favorite, pumpkin. A cup of pumpkin contains 15 carbs. Deducting 3 grams of fiber gets us to 12 net carbs. And that's quite a lot. Plus the glycemic index of cooked pumpkin of 75, way above the ADA recommendation of less than 55 and my sweet spot of less than 50, indicates that this might not be the most blood sugar friendly vegetable there is. During my testing, I really enjoyed the rich flavor, but after consuming a bowl of roasted pumpkin, my blood sugar spiked quite sharply to above 200. And therefore I put pumpkin in the red bowl. If you're a fan of pumpkin, consider smaller portion sizes and balancing it with some other low GI foods. Next up is one of my favorites, zucchini. I love this one because you can add zucchini to almost any meal and make it healthier. Now, unfortunately, they are not as nutritious as pumpkins, but are they maybe more blood sugar friendly? Let's see. With 3.5 carbs and 1 gram of fiber per cup, or 2.5 net carbs per cup, zucchini are definitely a very low carb option. Glycemic index, again, is 15. Which indicates they really might be blood sugar friendly. During my testing, zucchini didn't cause any notable spike in my blood sugar, and that's why I'm placing them in the green bowl. You can freely incorporate them in your meals without worrying about your blood sugar. By the way, one of my favorite meals are these zucchini meatballs made from chicken breast, steel-cut oats, eggs, lots of spices and herbs, and a touch of Parmesan cheese. But now, shifting our focus to another popular vegetable, cauliflower. With 5 carbs and 2 grams of fiber, cauliflower is another low carb option. After deducting the fiber, we end up with only 3 net carbs per cup. That's very good. The glycemic index of 15 also looks very promising. In my testing, both raw and boiled cauliflower did very similar to broccoli. When I ate a cup of boiled cauliflower, I did see my blood spiking very little. Raw cauliflower was even more blood sugar friendly than the cooked one. And that's why I put cauliflower in the green bowl. Whenever I eat cauliflower, I'm not concerned about my blood sugar and counting carbs too much. I simply eat as much as I want. Now let's explore another squash variety, butternut squash. Boiled butternut squash has 22 carbs per cup, and even after deducting a solid 7 grams of fiber, we land at 15 net carbs per cup. This is a higher carb veggie for sure, but the glycemic index of butternut squash is 51, which is within the ADA recommendation of less than 55. Now, during my testing, I experienced a notable spike in my blood sugar after consuming a portion of squash, and that's why I'm placing it in the red bowl. If you enjoy butternut squash, consider eating it in moderation, and if you are insulin dependent like me, make sure to count those carbs and pre-bolus as needed. Moving on to another popular veggie, cabbage. Both white and red cabbage have very similar characteristics. 4 carbs and 2 grams of fiber per cup gets us to 2 net carbs. So cabbage is a viable low carb option. The glycemic index of raw cabbage is 15, indicating that this might also be a blood sugar friendly option. When I tested cabbage, I didn't notice any impact on my blood glucose at all. After eating a cup of both raw and cooked cabbage, my blood sugar stayed flat, and that's why I'm placing it in the green bowl for sure. I was surprised that I didn't see a different impact in my blood sugar test after cooking the cabbage. Now, if you really like cabbage, you might want to consider sauerkraut too. The fermented version of cabbage, just like plain cabbage, is extremely blood sugar friendly, plus it provides even more nutrients and health benefits. Now, let's talk about another two very popular leafy greens, spinach and kale. Both spinach and kale contain about 1 gram of carbs and less than 0.5 gram of net carbs per cup. That's practically zero, making it an exceptional great low carb option. The glycemic index is 15. It could not get better than this. During my testing, these leafy greens did literally nothing with my blood sugar, no matter how much I ate. My blood sugar didn't move up, even after eating a huge bowl of spinach. So if you like them, you should definitely incorporate these leafy greens into your salads, into your soup, stews, wherever you can and wherever you want. You will make your blood sugar and your body very happy when you do that. Now, before I tell you what is the absolute favorite vegetable of mine, I want to tell you how you can connect with me. The easiest way to do that is my Patreon, where you can message me directly and watch bonus content. I do respond to every question from my patrons, and that's why places in my Patreon group must be limited. Check out the link below and sign up while there are still some spots available. I also do a few sessions of one-on-one coaching per week. So if you want to chat, there is another link in the video description where you can book time with me. So what's the verdict? What is the best vegetable for diabetes, according to Tom? We have many of them in the green bowl right now, but which one is best? Now, this will be a little subjective because I think it's important that the best vegetable is in the green bowl, but it might be even more important that you enjoy eating it and that you actually will eat it because you like it. For me, the absolute winner is spinach. My mom used to make it for me all the time when I was a kid. I love it. Whenever I see it on the menu in a restaurant, I order spinach because it's a side dish full of nutrients. It's so much better than any rice, pasta, or whatever else they might have. Now, we talked about a lot of vegetables in this video, but if you live with diabetes, it's really important to not only understand how vegetables impact your blood sugar, but also how fruits impact your blood sugar, because fruits can impact your blood blood sugar and raise it even more.
So what is the best fruit for people with diabetes?
Just like with vegetables, we're gonna divide the most popular fruits in three buckets. Green buckets with fruits causing only a mild blood sugar spike, aka blood sugar friendly fruits. Yellow bucket with fruits causing a moderate blood sugar spike, aka okay fruits. And red bucket with fruits that can cause a steep blood sugar spike. Let's start with the most popular fruit there is, bananas. Bananas are a good source of vitamin B6 or potassium, but let's see what they do to our blood sugar. An average banana has 23 carbs per 100 grams. When we deduct 3 grams of fiber, we get to 20 net carbs. That's quite a lot of carbs. Remember the basic rule, the more carbs you eat, the bigger blood sugar spike you will get. But the next important thing to look at is the glycemic index, or GI. The higher the GI is, the faster your blood sugar spike will be. An average banana has a GI of 51. That's actually not that bad. But in combination with the high carb content, bananas spike blood sugar quite a lot. And that's exactly what I could see in my blood sugar test. And therefore, I put bananas in the red bucket. Now, let me be clear. I'm not saying that you're not allowed to eat bananas at all. But what I am saying is consider smaller portions anytime you're eating any fruit from the red bucket. Eating half a banana is perfectly fine, but you don't need to eat 3 of them, right? Plus, if you are an insulin-dependent diabetic like me, pay close attention how much insulin you need for that banana and when exactly you should take that insulin. Next up are apples. Apples are a great source of vitamin C and many important minerals. Plus, they are much lower in carbs than bananas. An average apple has 14 carbs per 100 gram, and when we deduct 2 grams of fiber, we get to 12 net carbs. Not bad, but not that great. For me personally, fruits that have less than 10 net carbs per 100 grams are great. Fruits between 10 and 15 net carbs are okay, and that's exactly where apples land. But the next important thing to look at is the glycemic index. The general recommendation of the American Diabetes Association is going for foods with GI of less than 55. For me, less than 55 is okay, but less than 40 is where I want to be. That's my sweet spot. And apples have a GI of 39, which is actually very good. But when I tested my blood sugar after eating apples, I could still see a noticeable blood sugar spike, although the blood sugar didn't spike as high and as fast when compared to bananas. Therefore, we're gonna put apples in the yellow bucket. With fruits in the yellow bucket, I know that I can eat a bigger portion or a medium-sized portion. Like one whole medium-sized apple is perfectly fine. But I still do pay close attention to my insulin dose and timing of that insulin, because if I get that right, I know that my blood sugar after eating an apple will not spike very high, and I will stay in the optimal range. Moving on to another very popular fruit, grapes. Grapes are an awesome source of antioxidants, plus they can be incredibly tasty and refreshing on a hot summer day. But they can also be very sweet, so let's have a look what they do to our blood sugar. Grapes have around 18 carbs per 100 grams. Deducting 1 gram of fiber gets up to 17 net carbs. That's a lot of carbs. The glycemic index of grapes is around 59, which is very high. Now, one thing to keep in mind is that GI of any fruits can vary depending on the source of information, depending on how ripe the fruit is, where it comes from, and many other factors. Therefore, you can have overripe, very sweet grapes with GI close to 70, or you can have underripe, sour grapes with GI even below 50. Now, when I tested my blood sugar after eating grapes, I could see a steep blood sugar spike within less than 40 minutes, and therefore I put grapes in the red bucket. Next up, and one of my personal favorites, strawberries. Fresh strawberries are very sweet and tasty, but they contain 90% of water, so their carb content is actually very low. Every strawberry has around 8 carbs per 100 gram. Deducting 2 grams of fiber gets us to 6 net carbs. So we might be looking at an amazing blood sugar friendly fruit here, but let's have a look at the glycemic index first, before we make the conclusion. And here we're looking at the GI of 39, which is right around the upper limit of my sweet spot. When I tested my blood sugar after eating strawberries, I was pleasantly surprised. I did see a very mild blood sugar spike. No big deal at all. Therefore, I put strawberries in the green bucket. And with the fruits in the green bucket, I'm not concerned with the portion size at all. I'll simply eat as much as I want. I will just make sure to count carbs and take the right dose of insulin for it, depending on my carb to insulin ratio. Now, I know many people who like to blend strawberries in a smoothie. I know this tastes great, but here is a word of warning. When you blend those strawberries or any other fruit, you break take most of the fiber, and therefore you will increase the net carb content as well as GI of that fruit. And you will get a bigger and faster blood sugar spike from drinking a strawberry smoothie compared to eating just whole strawberries. Next popular fruit we're gonna talk about are oranges. Now we all know they are loaded with vitamin C, antioxidants and nutrients, but are they blood sugar friendly? An average orange has about 12 carbs per 100 grams. Deducting 2 grams of fiber gets us to 10 grams of net carbs. That's not too bad. But the next thing to look at is the glycemic index, and oranges have a GI of 45. Now that's within the ADA recommendation, but it's slightly above my sweet spot of less than 40. When I tested my blood sugar after eating oranges, I could still see a noticeable blood sugar spike within the first hour after eating it. Not as bad as bananas or grapes, but not as good as strawberries, for example. Therefore, we're gonna put oranges in the yellow bucket, right next to apples. These two fruits have very similar effect on my blood sugar. Now, you don't have to avoid oranges altogether. From my experience, eating one whole orange is perfectly fine. Just don't overdo it. And if you're an insulin dependent, just make sure to count those carbs and get the right dose of insulin for it. But be careful, because there is an orange trap that many diabetics fall into. And that's orange juice. Glass of orange juice contains all the carbs and all the sugar from 2 to 3 oranges, but no fiber. And the GI of orange juice is a lot higher than the GI of whole oranges. So just stay away from juice. Moving on to another super popular fruit, especially during the summer month, watermelon. Watermelon is a bit tricky. Many websites put it in the top 10 best fruits for diabetics, but other sources put it on the list of the worst fruits for diabetics. So who should we believe? Well, let's test it for ourselves. Watermelon has only about 8 carbs per 100 grams. That may look really good, but what we need to consider is that watermelon is 92% water and it has very little fiber. Therefore, those carbs from watermelon will get to your bloodstream very fast. And that's exactly what the glycemic index of watermelon shows us. We're looking at a GI of 76, which is by far the highest of all the fruits on the top 20 list. When I ate a small bowl of watermelon, my blood sugar spiked fast, but not very high. It went from 100 to 150. But when I ate a bigger bowl, I could see a spike to 200s in only 30 minutes, although I took my insulin with it, and that's a big no-no for me. Therefore, I put watermelon in the red bucket. I don't want to discourage you from eating watermelon altogether, but please don't eat too much of it. Portion control is key with this fruit. Another thing you can consider is eating the watermelon as a dessert after a meal rich in fiber and healthy fats. If you do that, your body will not be able to process the sugar from the watermelon that fast. Now, I know we didn't have many blood sugar friendly options in the most popular fruits, but keep watching because it gets much more interesting as we go down the list. Most popular fruit number 7 is avocado. This buttery fruit is literally loaded with healthy fats, fiber, vitamins, and nutrients. An average avocado, interestingly, has 12 carbs per 100 grams, but it also has an insane amount of fiber, 10 grams. And when we deduct those 10 grams of fiber, we get an incredible 2 net carbs per 100 grams. It couldn't get better than that. Plus, looking at the glycemic index, avocados have a GI of 15. That's also incredible. I ate avocado multiple times during my testing and it hardly impacted my blood sugar at all. I could not see any noticeable blood sugar spikes, not even after eating a couple avocados at once. And therefore, all things considered, I put avocado in the green bucket, without a doubt. I simply eat as much avocado as I feel like eating and I don't need any insulin for it. I just love these bad boys. But one thing I would warn you about, especially if you're on a diet, is that avocado is very calorie dense, calorie rich food. A whole medium avocado has 240 calories, mainly due to healthy fats, which is quite a lot. I personally don't care about calories that much because I'm not trying to lose weight right now, but it's something you might want to consider if you are in a different situation. Now let's dive into another super popular fruit, blueberries. The tiny powerhouses are packed with antioxidants. Blueberries have approximately 14 carbs per 100 grams, and after deducting 2 grams of fiber, we get to 12 net carbs. And that falls slightly on the higher side of my preference, close to apples. The glycemic index of blueberries is 53, which is moderate compared to other popular fruits, but it's definitely a lot more than I was expecting to see, to be honest. Now, it's a common belief that all the berries are a good option for people with diabetes and that they don't spike blood sugar that much. But when I tested my blood sugar after indulging in a bowl of blueberries, I could see my blood sugar spiking quickly and gradually to higher than what I would want
want to see.
And therefore, I'm placing blueberries in the yellow bucket. Now, I figured as a type 1 diabetic, I can eat a full cup of blueberries without my blood sugar spiking too high. But I need to be careful about two things. I need to pre-bolus about 15 to 20 minutes before eating those blueberries, and I need to get my insulin dose right, depending on the carb count. Next, we're going to explore raspberries, because at the first sight, these might have similar characteristics to blueberries, but they really don't when it comes to blood sugar control. Raspberries have 10 carbs per 100 grams, but after deducting impressive 5 grams of fiber, we get to only 5 net carbs. And this places them in the lower carb range and looks really promising. But what about the glycemic index? Well, the GI of raspberries is only 28, which is very low and comfortably within my sweet spot of less than 40. After eating an even large amount of raspberries, I could see a minimum impact on my blood sugar. And therefore, raspberries are going to be in the green bucket. You can enjoy these guilt-free, so feel free to indulge in them. They are a game changer. But here's a word of warning. Many people like to make a sauce or a jam from raspberries, as well as other berries, or even apricots and peaches. Now, I know these homemade jams and toppings taste great, but here is the problem. To get the jam or the sauce, you need to cook those berries or any other fruit. When you do that, you will break some of the fiber, and you will also get rid of the water, which is naturally the main ingredient in almost any fruit. Once the water is extracted, the carb content, and especially the net carb content, will go up, and your GI will also go up. So your blood sugar will be spiking much faster and much more when you do that. I'm not even talking about jams and sauces with added sugar, because sugar changes this into a completely different food category, and we cannot call this fruit anymore. So stay away from that. Next up are peaches, the juicy and sweet summer delights full of vitamins and minerals. Peaches contain about 15 carbs per 100 grams, and after deducting 2 grams of fiber, we get to 13 net carbs. And that places peaches on the higher end of my preferred carb range. But the glycemic index of peaches is 42, which is not that bad actually. And while testing peaches, I saw a noticeable blood sugar spike, but not as steep as with fruits in the red bucket. And therefore, peaches are going into the yellow bucket. I was actually pleasantly surprised because peaches did even better than blueberries for me. Here is the thing. I recently received a comment on YouTube from one of you, highlighting a great rule of thumb. The commenter had an interesting observation, and he said, the darker the food is, the lower the glycemic index. And the brighter the food is, more likely it will break down faster into glucose. This is a great comment, and it seems to be very accurate, because in 95% of instances, you will be better off choosing darker food over brighter food. It will do better for your blood sugar. But interestingly, peaches and blueberries might be an exception, kind of confirming that rule. Moving on to another popular refreshing fruit that screams summer, cantaloupe. I sometimes call it orange melon, but that's probably just a dumb name for it. Cantaloupe has about 8 carbs per 100 grams, and we deduct 1 gram of fiber, we get to 7 net carbs. That is very low carb content, so looks promising. But the glycemic index of cantaloupe is 65. That's very high compared to other popular fruits, and it's indicating a steep blood sugar spike. And I could see that in my blood sugar test. When I ate a small bowl of the orange melon, my blood sugar spiked quite fast, but not very high. It went from 100 to 150. But when I ate a bigger bowl, I could see a quick spike to 200s in only 35 minutes, although I took my insulin with it. And that's very similar to watermelon and far from ideal. Therefore, I put cantaloupe in the red bucket. Now, I do eat orange melon, as I like to call it, from time to time. But I don't need a lot of it. I just eat like half a cup, because portion control is key with the fruits in the red bucket. I also make sure to carb count and take my insulin well ahead of time, and with cantaloupe it can be 20 or even 25 minutes before eating that fruit. Next, let's talk about mandarins. These are kind of similar to oranges in terms of vitamin content and also the color, right? But one reason why I used to prefer mandarins to oranges was very simple, because they're easier to peel. They also tend to be a bit sweeter than oranges. So let's see which bucket they land in. Mandarins have about 14 carbs per 100 grams, and after deducting 2 grams of fiber, we get to 12 net carbs. That falls on the moderate carb range. Not great, but not ideal. Now, the glycemic index of mandarin is an okay 47, not in my sweet spot of less than 40, but also not above 55, which would be too high. When I tested my blood sugar after eating mandarins, I saw my blood sugar rising gradually for about an hour, maybe a bit less. The blood sugar spike was not as steep as with watermelon or cantaloupe, cantaloupe, but it was definitely noticeable. And therefore, we're gonna put mandarins in the yellow bucket. They had a very similar effect on my blood sugar as oranges, although they tasted a bit sweeter. Guys, we still have 8 more popular fruits to go through, and 5 of them will fall in the green bucket, meaning I can eat as much as I want without my blood sugar spiking too much. Now let's explore pineapple, a tropical delight full of flavor and vitamins, especially vitamin C. Pineapple has approximately 13 carbs per 100 grams, and when we deduct 1 gram of fiber, we get to 12 net carbs. And that's a moderate carb range. Not bad, but not perfect. But the glycemic index at 59 is rather high, exceeding my sweet spot and also exceeding the ADA recommendation of less than 55. When I was testing pineapple, I could see that my blood sugar response was practically immediate. I got a noticeable spike and my blood sugar reached the maximum within less than 40 minutes after eating the pineapple. And that's the main reason why pineapple is going to the red bucket. You can enjoy it, but I would not eat more than half a cup in one sitting. And if you're insulin dependent, you know the routine. Count carbs, get the right dose, and pre-bolus. Next up are plums, the juicy stone fruit full of vitamin C, fiber, and potassium. Plums have about 11 carbs per 100 gram. And after deducting 1 gram of fiber, this gets us to 10 net carbs, which is very good. The glycemic index of plums is 39, which is right under the limit of my sweet spot of less than 40. And that looks really promising. So what about plums? How did they do in my blood sugar test? Well, I saw a mild and gradual blood sugar spike, and therefore plums are kinda on the line between in the green bucket and yellow bucket. But after eating them a couple times, I realized I wanna put them in the green bucket because they did really well for me. You won't go wrong with plums. Moving on to cherries, and here we have to be careful because there are sweet cherries and sour cherries. Sweet cherries have about 15 net carbs per 100 grams, falling on the higher carb range, while sour cherries have only 10 net carbs per 100 grams, falling in the lower carb range. Remember, I like to be below 15, but ideally below 10 net carbs. But there is an even bigger difference between sweet cherries and sour cherries when it comes to glycemic index. The GI of sweet cherries can be as high as 62, while the GI of sour cherries is only 22, and that's very low. And that's probably why these two kinds of cherries gave me a completely different blood sugar response. Sweet cherries quickly spiked my blood sugars to 200s, which is way too much for me. Sour cherries only caused a very mild spike, so they are perfect for me. And therefore, sour cherries are going in the green bucket. Sweet cherries are going to the red bucket. You can eat a lot of sour cherries without any concern, but you can also eat up to 10 sweet cherries and not be too worried about your blood sugar reaction. Next up are blackberries, those dark and juicy berries with a nutritional punch. Blackberries have about 10 carbs per 100 grams, but an impressive 5 grams of fiber puts them to 5 net carbs, and this makes them one of the most low-carb fruits on the list so far. But what about the glycemic index? Well, the glycemic index of blackberries is only 25, and that's perfectly within my sweet spot of less than 40. After testing blackberries, I could see only a very minimal impact on my blood sugar, and therefore blackberries are absolutely going into the green bucket. You can definitely enjoy this nutrient-rich food without worrying about your blood sugar spiking too much. Now let's talk about pears, another widely popular sweet and juicy fruit, which is loaded with good stuff, especially vitamin C, copper, and fiber. Now, pears have about 15 carbs per 100 grams, and deducting 3 grams of fiber gets us to 12 net carbs. That's a moderate carb range. Not great, but not perfect. Now, the glycemic index of pears is only 38, and that's a bit lower than I actually expected it to be, perfectly within my sweet spot of less than 40. To be fair, I could still see a noticeable blood sugar spike after eating pears, which was very similar to apples, and therefore we're gonna put pears in the yellow bucket, but eating one whole medium-sized pear is completely fine for me. I wouldn't eat 3 of them, but one is okay. And just like with most other fruits, I pay close attention to my insulin dose and to the timing of that insulin. Now we have 3 more fruits to go, and after that I'm gonna give you a bonus because I'm gonna give you 2 more fruits that are not in the top 20 popular fruits, but I think they are an excellent choice for people living with diabetes. So next up on the list is another fruit packed with vitamin C, kiwi. Now I know some of you live in New Zealand and have tons of kiwis around you. Someone actually asked me to talk about kiwis, so here it is. Kiwi has approximately 14 carbs per 100 grams. Deducting 3 grams of fiber gets us to 11 net carbs. That's
pretty good, slightly above the 10 or below 10 where I would like to be for a low carb fruit, but it's okay. Now the glycemic index of kiwi is 53, which is within the ADA recommendation of less than 55, but it is above my sweet spot of less than 40. Therefore, kiwi is probably not bad for you, but it's just not the best blood sugar friendly option. I could see a decent spike after eating ripe kiwis, and that's why I put kiwi in the yellow bucket as well. As a type 1 diabetic, I can eat about 2 whole kiwis without my blood sugar spiking too much, but I need to make sure to get insulin depending on the carb content and pre-bolus by about 15 to 20 minutes. For those non-insulin dependent, I would say enjoy kiwis but only in moderation to make sure your blood sugar stays under control. Now let's talk about grapefruit, which looking at the data seems to be a great option for low stable blood sugar. Grapefruit has only 11 carbs per 100 grams, and after deducting 2 grams of fiber, we get to 9 net carbs, which is perfect within my sweet spot of less than 10. Now the GI of grapefruit is 25, and that's also very good because your blood sugar will not spike very fast after eating grapefruit. And I was even able to confirm this assumption during my testing. There was only a mild impact of grapefruit on my blood sugar. Therefore, grapefruit for me is going clearly to the green bucket. But I know that this verdict of mine is going to be very controversial because you guys like to talk about grapefruits in the comment section. There's millions of comments about grapefruit. And there is reason why is that grapefruit should be avoided by people who use certain drugs, because grapefruit blocks certain enzymes and transporters that the body needs to metabolize those drugs. Now this is not the case for me, so I can keep indulging in grapefruit, but if you take other medication and are not sure, pick this topic up with your doctor before consuming grapefruit. Now before I show you the 2 bonus fruits that are not on the top 20 list but are my secret weapon for fighting diabetes, we need to talk about the elephant in the room: mango. Mangoes are another tropical delight full of flavor and vitamins, especially vitamin E. And let me be clear, I love eating mangoes. But mangoes have about 15 carbs per 100 grams, and after deducting 2 grams of fiber, we get to 13 net carbs. That's a moderate carb range, not bad, but not great. The glycemic index of mango is 55, which is exceeding my sweet spot of less than 40, and is right on the upper range of the ADA recommendation of less than 55. Now, in my blood sugar tests, I could see a rather steep blood sugar rise from mango. My blood sugar reached the maximum within 45 to 50 minutes after eating it, and therefore mangoes are simply going to the red bucket. But again, I have to admit I absolutely love mangoes, and I eat them quite often in my breakfast bowl. And to be able to do that, I need to pre-bolus well in advance, ideally 20 or even 25 minutes. Now I noticed that dried mango is getting more and more popular, and I want to talk about it because the drying process of any fruit changes the glucose response of that fruit. When you dry mango slices, you will get rid of most of the water content. And when you do that, number one, the net carb content goes up because you took out all the water, but you kept all the sugar. So while the 100 grams of fresh mango has 13 net carbs, 100 grams of dried mango can have up to 39 carbs, which is 5 times more. The other thing that will happen is that the glycemic index will go down because you took out the water. It will take longer for the body to process those carbs and get them into the bloodstream. And that's why your blood sugar after eating half a cup of dried mango will go up 5 times more than from eating half a cup of fresh mango. But it will also go up a bit slower. And a similar thing will happen when you dry any fruit. So keep that in mind. It's kind of fascinating, isn't it? I'm obsessed by studying all these little things that impact our blood sugar. And that's why I started working on a brand new project, the Blood Sugar Academy. The Blood Sugar Academy is my exclusive coaching program, which will help you live your life the way you want while achieving consistent blood sugar and lower HbA1c. If you want to learn more, just click the link below and register your interest. I will make sure to share more information with you once the program is launched. But now, 2 more fruits that I promised that I absolutely love. They both have less than 10 net carbs per 100 grams and a GI of less than 35. And they both fall in the green bucket. Number one is apricots. Apricots have around 9 carbs per 100 grams and 2 grams of fiber, which gets us to 7 net carbs. Now that's amazing, but combined with the GI of 34, it gets even better. Here is what my blood sugar does after eating apricot. You can see a noticeable but very mild and rather slow spike that is easy to control for both insulin dependent and non-insulin dependent people with diabetes. And bonus fruit number 2 is guava. South American guava is so tasty, I love to eat it, and it has 14 carbs per 100 grams. But out of that 14 grams, 5 5 grams is fiber. So we get to 9 net carbs only. That on its own is very good, and combined with the GI of only 25, it gets even better. Here is what my blood sugar did after eating guava. Again, a noticeable but rather mild and slow, easy to control spike. Now you probably clicked on this video because you want to know what I think is the best fruit for people with diabetes. We have many fruits in the green bucket right now, but which one is best? Here it gets a bit tricky because I think it's very important that the fruit we call the best is in the green bucket. But it's also very important that you like and enjoy eating it, that it has good taste and you just enjoy eating it and you're craving that fruit. Otherwise, you will just not eat it. And I think any of the fruits in the green bucket can be the best fruit for you. For me, the absolute winner is avocado, because for me, there is nothing that beats a homemade guacamole spread on a fresh, blood sugar-friendly bread. And if you wonder what I think the best bread for diabetes is, click here and watch this video next. I will see you there.